Brian O'Driscoll
on Off the Ball
with Air Sport. Watch Munster v Leinster on December 29th exclusively live on Air Sport.
Yeah, you're very welcome along this Friday evening. We are here in association with Air Sport, the home of rugby in Ireland. And as the Sting said, Brian O'Driscoll's here. Brian, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Also here is Neil, who is our token Munster man because we were in danger of becoming the Leinster love-in. And Dave's here too.
Hey, lad.
Just to get the Leinster love-in out of the way, is this as good as they've ever been playing? Is this the best squad they've ever had? I've never seen anything like this. What the hell's going on?
Yeah, I think so. Yes to all of them. It's hard to argue from a consistency point of view and a strength and depth and a seamlessness of how people are fitting in, you know, where needs be. The fact that Sean O'Brien sits on the bench again this week, is he starting to get a bit worried? I know it's still very early in his return to fitness, but to have that luxury of Dan Levy pulling up in the warm-up and you get Reece Ruddock come in and put in a performance like that. Yeah. So I think at the standard that they played, there's very, very few teams in Europe at their best can live with that. Saracens being one. Exeter probably on their day too. Munster, when they play really well, can give Leinster a good game there. But at that standard, they are standard bearers for sure.
You also feel like individuals are getting better as the season goes on. So Robbie Henshaw took a little bit of time to get into the season and then was sensational last weekend. And you can kind of see even his partnership at Ringrose. We haven't really seen that play 10, 12, 15 games in a row. Like, I can't wait to see what they're like if they stay fit together for a couple of months.
Yeah, I don't think that Robbie Henshaw ever takes that long to get into the season. This year, maybe a tiny bit slower than other years. I've noticed the last couple of seasons he's come back from summer injuries in big games. He came back last year against Munster in the Aviva first game and was absolutely immense. So consistently very good. Doesn't make that many errors. You know, gives them go forward, good distributor. He's becoming a poster boy for Stuart Lancaster's game, a bit of everything.
Yeah. And what about James Lowe? Who you like?
Well, I asked Leo the question in the post-match debrief of the game, you know, what do you do now?
Yeah.
Like you've got, the problem is, from his perspective, is Jameson Gibson Park. He can't become Irish qualified quick enough because how do you leave Scott Fardy, nominated as one of the, you know, shortlisted as European Player of the Year last year? Very unlucky to miss out. He was my pick. I'm on the panel, but he very, very marginally missed out.
Scott Fardy, who can't get into the team at the moment.
Yeah. Exactly. And then you've got James Lowe playing the best we've seen him in the year and a bit that he's been here. Defensively now is very clear what he's doing. His kicking game is brilliant. You know, that left boot.
Huge boot. Mm.
It's the accuracy of it. It's not just the you know, the length. It's the, you know, when it's nudged in behind him in the 5 meter channel, he's knocking it 50 or 60 in that 5 meter channel.
Kicking on the run
as well,
I think he's very good at.
It's just so intelligent. Yeah. It really is. So, and he is, again, he's another one that is clearly told by Stuart to throw the 50-50 because he doesn't have to be asked twice. That's in his game. Found out in our notes last week that he's played basketball under 15s for New Zealand, so you can see a bit of that in his play. He is very comfortable with a ball in hand.
He is also on the pathway to becoming Irish qualified, which only kind of became something that people started talking about recently enough.
Can he do? Will he get in the 3 year?
I think
it's going to be the 5 year for him.
Okay,
yeah, Jameson Gibson Park gets in on the three.
Okay, so then we could maybe forget about it.
Guys like Gibson Park, John Klein, they kind of just beat the window, didn't they? Before it shut on them. Now, whether or not he wants to be around that long to become Irish qualified, was he 25 years old? So, I mean, he's already 30 by the time he's even eligible to play. So that's why they made the change, I guess.
But he's not playing All Black rugby. He's not going to get a chance to play international elsewhere. This is his only chance.
And also, I just think he seems like the kind of guy, the kind of personality that probably hasn't even thought 4 or 5 years down the line, am I going to wear a green shirt or not? Like, he seems to kind of really just think about the next few months and what he's doing there.
I wonder if he even thinks that far ahead. Honestly, I wonder if he thinks past what he's going to have for his dinner tomorrow afternoon. Because of all the players I've seen in the last couple of years that isn't a teenager with that fearlessness of youth, someone who's in their mid-20s onwards, he just seems to be playing like he's a child. In the playground.
And it's not in an immature way or anything, in a very enjoyable way.
Yeah, well, it's in a way that somebody has real perspective in their lives.
Yeah.
God knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
I've got a game tonight. I might as well go out and play it like my last,
yeah,
without fear, enjoy it, play with a smile on my face. And he's given a couple of really insightful press conferences and interviews over the last couple of weeks, which give you an indication of how happy and comfortable he is with where he's living. His girlfriend is happy. Everything is in place for him to just go out and fling the ball around the place.
We can see he's a popular guy amongst, you know, you can tell pretty quickly on try celebrations,
yeah,
and when something big happens, who likes a guy and who doesn't, who's one of the more popular guys. And it's definitely evident that he's up there. And I think it's hard. I don't know him. I've said hello to him, but that smile is infectious, and yeah, it makes you want to like him.
Yeah,
and
Keith made the point that opposition teams hate him, and that hadn't even struck me. Like, as somebody who he's on your team, you're just like unbelievably happy that this is a guy on your side. And yeah, the finishes are they've all been amazing.
Yeah,
like they keep getting better and better.
Well, those monster finishes were brilliant.
Mm-hmm. The rugby league finishes.
Yeah.
You know, where he's almost coming in from the sideline, NRL, exactly. Yeah. See that week in, week out, watching those highlights. Mm. You could watch him all night. He's worth the admission fee alone every time you head in and have a look at him.
So Luke McGrath starts at 9 this week, and I guess there's an opportunity for McGrath to put his hand up at this stage. We don't know yet if Conor Murray's going to be back or available for the November internationals. McGrath hasn't yet got to the point where he's trusted by Joe Schmidt, but what's his game? Where's his game at the moment?
Well, it's a great chance because John Cooney's not playing this weekend either. Marmion's not. So he's the only, you know, one of the top four scrum halves that has a chance to shine. So I think I'd love to know what Joe Schmidt's thoughts were. Has he actually come out and said that Luke was left out of the squad on form during the summer? I think Luke, carried a lot of injuries towards the end of the season. He had a bad ankle injury. He was playing on one leg in that Saracens game, managed to get it done for 65 minutes. I thought that was a heroic performance because I could see in the warm-up that he was carrying it. And when it's in your head in the warm-up, it takes a lot of battling to get through for the first 65 minutes. So I thought that was an exceptionally tough, mentally tough performance from him. And then, you know, he had a heavily strapped knee. I just wondered what did Joe think. I know what's there. You know, I know what I'm getting from him. Let me, you know, John Cooney's been in good form. Marmion, yes, has always done a good job for me. So let's have a look.
And he fits the mould of a Joe Schmidt player perfectly, I think.
Well, defensively, I think he's starting to rival Conor Murray in his smarts. In, you know, maybe not as physical yet. He's a very, very good defender. He's very, very brave. But his intellect is really growing. And I've seen that in the last year or two. I think all four scrum halves are actually quite good defenders. Marmion, again, smart defender, very brave. John Cooney probably doesn't get into it as much. I don't think he enjoys it as much as the others. But he does other things brilliantly well. So,
of the three for McGrath, Cooney and Marmion, who of the three is the best passer?
Cooney.
As in, he's got the quickest release, has he?
Yeah, I think Cooney has the best pass. And then,
and if you're picking a match day 23 for a big match and you're Joe Schmidt, if you have two goal-kicking 10s in your 23, so all things being equal, it's going to be Sexton and Carberry. Does the fact that Cooney is so accurate come into your thinking at all?
Yeah, I think it does. I think you... it's another string to someone's bow. It's on a 50-50 call, of course, that has to come in where, you know, Johnny goes down injured. Joey is a proficient goal kicker without being exceptional yet. And I think, I don't think we have the confidence yet that it takes, you know, tens, a few years, unless you come out of the blocks like Johnny Wilkinson and you're metronomic. You know, it takes time for everyone to trust a 10. And just with Munster, I don't feel guaranteed 3 points with the shots there where you would expect your 10 to knock over. You're thankful for it with Joey, but there's so much more to his game that it's almost you cut him a little bit of slack.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Conor Murray kicks if it's Murray and...
Maybe.
That's what it feels like at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's close.
It's Murray and who? Carberry.
And Carberry
do you think?
And
Dana
Munster, maybe.
Well, that will be interesting to see if and when Murray's back 100% fit if he takes the kicking tee from Joey Carberry.
Sorry, I think at Munster, Carberry will kick because that's like... But I think if it's an Ireland situation, Sexton goes down, heaven forbid, and we have Murray at 9 and Joey Carberry at 10. I think for Ireland...
That makes no sense, though.
What?
It makes no sense if Carberry is kicking for Munster and then he gets usurped by his 9 at national level just because it's a different colour jersey.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that Joe Schmidt's going to say, I've seen you kick at a level that I trust Conor Murray, and I'm just going to give you a little while there to.
I don't think you yourself. Can. I don't think you can have it one way at provincial level and a different way at international. No, it's got to start the same way. So where's the confidence in a coach going? Actually, you've done really well for Munster. Well done, but you know what? He kicked a goal against the All Blacks. That was really important.
I know, and that's what
and he does. And coaches do remember that stuff. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
they do. And sometimes negatives can stick in players' minds as well. I kind of think back to Eddie O'Sullivan probably wasn't Jordan Murphy's biggest fan. And there was an incident where he missed a tackle in that 0-7 game against
France.
Against Ibanez or something. And yeah, and it stayed.
Never comes up.
It stayed. It stayed.
So the good news about James Lowe is he qualifies for 2020. He arrived before the rule change.
Okay.
So there you go. That's right. Like.
Why is that? Maybe it's because it's so far away.
But you're still talking another 2 years down the line. January 2018 when he arrived.
But it's never mentioned in any dispatches with James Lowe, for example.
I saw it last week, that's why I brought it up. I thought it was like that was the first time I'd seen it.
Reece Marshall has always been asked, do you want to play for Ireland someday? He only qualifies a month before James Lowe. So that's why I assumed that Lowe just didn't make it through the window. But like if he's qualifying in, 14 months' time? Like he's in.
Yeah.
If he's still playing to this level.
Yeah. Well, he's in the mix.
Yeah. There's no reason why he wouldn't play to this level.
Keith Earls is still better than
Let's not retire
Lowe.
Keith Earls while we're here
Keith
now.
Keith Earls is still, for me, if you're picking on form of the last year and versus the form of the last 2 weeks, year. Keith Earls is still Ireland's best winger.
Yeah.
He still can make a different level of magic happen because of his acceleration, because of his speed. I think Jacob Stockdale scored 7 tries in the Six Nations last year, so probably deserves a mention in this conversation.
Not something we need to worry about for 2 years.
Yeah. Anyway. So, and listen, it's a lovely headache to have in 2 years' time if all goes well. But you know, Keith will be 32 then, and everyone will want to write him off. So
we'll be world champions at the time, so you'll need something to shake things
there
up.
There you go. There you go.
Rob Kearney's missing from the team. Jordan Larmour starting at full back. Rob Kearney will be looking at this a little bit uncomfortably, won't he?
There's the future. Yeah. It is in reality. That's what we're going to see in Leinster, be it in 2 years' time, 3 years' time. Rob Kearney will have a lot to say about that as to how much longer after the World Cup he'll play on for. He's only 32. When is he? 33 in March. So by the following, he'll be turning 34 in the Six Nations after. The World Cup, don't write players off at 34, but he's got a lot of miles in the clock.
We wrote him off at 26 and 28.
Yeah, 30.
30. So Rob, he's well used to guys telling him that his international career.
Well, he said
is
it
over.
Last year as well, didn't he? When Larmour was coming through at Ireland, he was saying, "You're trying to retire me every other week."
Yeah, I see him
just
as
the start
an
of the Six
winger.
Nations.
Is it better for Larmour to find himself at 15 in terms of the regularity with which he gets that space?
I think so. I think he's better at 15. I think he gets to exploit space a lot more. And you get to frighten players more at 15. You're coming from different angles. You're a little bit boxed in as a winger. You know, you don't have both sides to run to. You don't have open field. You've got a touchline more often than not to deal with. And so you're being, you know, a defender can usher you to the touchline and use it. Whereas at fullback, you know, if he runs down the middle of the pitch with his footwork, he frightens people. And that's why we love watching him. And that's why I think he is better at 15. And the other parts of his game will evolve and come. And, you know, I would imagine he's probably pretty detailed on his extras of his catching and kicking. And there are parts of his game that, in comparison to Rob Kearney, are a good bit behind. But he's got a few other handy aspects to what he does.
Yeah. Still 21 only.
Yeah,
it's insane. Oh, the medal he already has. So just a reminder, if you're watching on any of our social streams, be sure to get involved in the comment section below. All this season, we're giving away great prizes with thanks to Heineken. This week, we're giving away some OTB branded goodies. So if you want to get your hands on them, get your comments in. Sam is asking on Facebook, where do you see Will Addison fitting into Schmidt's plans, bench option or capable of making a start? He seems to rate him highly.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be. Sorry, was that for me?
I guess so.
I don't know if he's going to be.
Please, you take it.
I don't know if he's going to be a starter. But what he is, someone we were mentioning in commentary on Friday, is the fact that he played 13. He's played 15 for the first few games of the season. Is he someone that gets in on as the 29th or 30th man in a squad if he goes well this November? He'll definitely get capped in November. And is he possibly right now cover if there's one or two injuries. I would think so, but I also think Mike Haley has started the season really well. Yeah. I think he's looked very good
straight away.
Yeah, people aren't crying as much as you would have thought over Zeebo,
no,
because mm-hmm. Mike Haley's come in and done a good job. Similarly, in Ulster with Cooney and Pienaar, there's been the replacement has come in and done more than an ample job.
Yeah.
So I think both of those, because Ireland as well have four games, that both of those will get capped this November. And I think you as much as you have seen what they're capable of, Guinness Pro 14 and at a European level, you don't fully know how good someone is until they pull on an international jersey and get tested. It's a different game.
Yeah, and that next Six Nations is going to be really interesting because there's really only two games in this sweep of November internationals where you can trial that. And we were having this question earlier on during the week, and it was a little bit kind of taking the piss because Joe Schmidt's going to pick his strongest available team for the New Zealand game and absolutely try and go out there and win that match. There's not going to be any sense of, oh, I might try a new partnership here, or it's like the best 15 available players and the best subs to make an impact in that game. There's nobody going to be on the bench to just kind of make up or get some experience that day, is there?
I don't think so. I think it's because of how it falls, because it's less than a year away to the World Cup, and because they're the only team that are seeded ahead of Ireland. So on a technicality, they're meant to be the only team that are better than Ireland at the moment.
Yeah.
So to get one over on them is sowing a seed of doubt. And I think you have to go fully locked and loaded with the side against them. I think it would be silly and somewhat pointless to go in trying new combinations because
who cares? Let's win.
It's not. Yeah. Why? Why would you do that?
Just to go back to the game. So Leinster Toulouse, the Toulouse win last week is obviously a massive momentum boost to them because obviously the circumstances in which they win, people are familiar with at this point, completely ludicrous. They're probably supposed to lose. But at the same time, they almost lost that game to a not great Bath side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a chance here for Leinster to go and have a signature away win in Europe, right?
Definitely. The form lines do not paint Toulouse in a good light. Bath, Freddie Burns, aside from the penalty, they try screw up. He missed three very kickable penalties. Like really, if you think of the 7 points of the try, he personally left 16 points out there in a game that Toulouse only won by a score.
That said, he scores that try at the end. He's probably man of the match, scoring two tries in a game and being the difference.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, he had a good game and picked his lines really well. His line kicking was decent. His goal kicking obviously wasn't. But he just painted a completely different picture of that game than was probably a true reflection of what actually happened. I don't see anyone in the Toulouse team, particularly their pack, now that Jerome Kino's gone, that Leinster are going to look at and think, we can't dominate this pack for the whole game. This is not a good Toulouse team. They've got some real talent out wide.
Charlie Famuin.
Famuin is decent,
is a good
but
player.
They've had to make two changes in the front row. Geraldini's been left out. He's on the bench. They lost Pontu to a suspension. We know that Kino's been suspended. Like, what is there that you would be fearful of if you're a Leinster supporter or a Leinster player given the strength and depth in the Leinster 23?
I wouldn't be kicking loosely to Cheslin Colby, but other than that, and I haven't seen enough of Ntamack, he's highly rated, but enough to scare you, no. So I agree, I think Leinster go down and play well. There's a real shift in, yes, they're a European heavyweight, but it's changed. The rules of engagement have changed in a way that no longer are teams going down to Toulouse fearful of getting absolutely thumped. We went down there, I played 10 in 2001 or two, and we shipped 45 or 50. And that's what that Toulouse 10? Team, the only time I ever played for Leinster 10. Funny that. I don't know why I didn't get picked there again next for the following week. But that's what could happen. I do not see it with this Toulouse team.
It's not there.
It's not there on paper and even in form. They're a coming force again. They've had the post Guy Novez dip. They had a lot of turnover and the stalwarts have moved on. It's like that Munster team.
Yeah.
When that group of players moves on, it's very hard to when it's once in a generation group playing together. To then just for the next crew to come in and pick up where they left off.
They seem to be getting some players through their academy who are decent, and obviously Entomac is one of those. Speaking of signature wins, there's an opportunity for Munster to absolutely throttle Gloucester as well. You're very confident, Dave, talking around the office this week.
Yeah, and again, like, you know, most of my Toulouse opinion is based on what I saw last Sunday or last Saturday and the 15 on paper that are going to start this game. And like Toulouse, I would be very much the same road when it comes to my thoughts on Gloucester. I watched the Cass game. It was a terrible game.
In fairness, the weather didn't do them anything.
But at the same time, like, if you compare it to, say, the way Gloucester played to the way Munster played against Exeter the previous day, like, there's absolutely no comparison. The way Munster defended, now, they did fall off 18 tackles, I think, in the Exeter game, but that was because they were asked to make 185 tackles. Mm. And so, I mean, they still came up with an 85% tackle success rate. But Cass had their chances to win that game. And their top scorer is not in the team, Charlie Sharples. I'm scouring the internet to find a reason why. Yeah. He was part of their media build-up. Like, he did an interview in the build-up to the game, so unless he's picked up something in training, he's not in the team. And they have so little experience on the bench, pretty much nothing on the bench outside of...
Brant Grobler knows the calls.
He's on the bench, yeah.
There's been a lot read into the inside track that Gerbrand Grobler might be able to give Gloucester. But let's not forget that JP Ferreira was Ackerman's defence coach for years. Mm. If anybody knows the way Ackerman likes to set his team up and attack the spaces, it's JP Ferreira, the Munster defence coach. So, and you can give and take on the inside track side of things.
Even if they know the calls, Peter Manny's still going to win it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to win it.
Exactly, like, yeah.
I look at the back five in the Munster pack and Gloucester cannot compete with that.
That said, it'd be interesting to see what happens at set piece. Gloucester were statistically the best scrummagers in round one.
Yeah, they were nine from nine in round one. Yeah.
And Munster have now gone and changed their two props. And, well, Niall Scannell's been a forced change. But they definitely got a bit of trouble certainly Kilcoyne got a bit of trouble from Williams in the first round match. So set piece is huge, but I just cannot see how Munster will not give Gloucester a good going over. I think this Gloucester team, they've shown massive promise this year, and they look as though they're a team that are coming. But as of yet, they're massively unproven. And if you want to get some respect, there's no better place to start than in Thomen Park. But I just don't see it happening.
The other side of that is there's no better place to get completely spanked as well if Munster get into this early and start going at them the way we think they're going to. A question from Neil Ormond on Facebook. Will Peter O'Mahony's scrum binding be looked at this weekend by the referees after the media highlighted that he wasn't binding under the lock like the rules say he should?
Probably. Yeah, probably.
Has to.
But as Donico Callan said in commentary, you know, it's a pretty selfless thing. Most sixes aren't thinking about how much scrummaging they're doing. They're thinking of you know, the back rower breaking out, or do they get the switch play if 10 does it with 12? I'm thinking picking that player up.
Yeah.
Whereas he's thinking, well, it also shows the mentality that they knew they were in trouble at scrum time, and that he had to do it. It was a necessity. But
it's a big risk, though.
Referees talk about it. Yeah. It is a big risk.
Because all it takes is for one right in front of the post, and you can even see it
He's not going to.
He's
do
been
it
doing in, it on every scrum.
Yeah,
this
but
season.
Yeah, but there'll every be single. But there'll one. Be different versions. I assure you, on their put in under the posts.
Every single one this season he has done. It's been on the ref cams. It's been on the ref cams in front of, like, you can see it directly underneath the referee's eyes.
He's no fool. It might, you know, I think he's given it more force further out the pitch. He's not going to be able to go into the video session on a Monday and go, I did a great job with the scrum. I know I missed the back row, the number eight breaking wide, and they scored. He's given a little bit of that, so it's a 60-40 where other times
it's even the taking the risk of giving away a penalty 22 yards out at a crucial time in the game.
Yeah.
It just takes the referee one chance to see that and go, actually, he's doing that now.
But are referees going to be blowing it? I think a referee's going to have a word. I think it would be pretty harsh for a referee to blow a straight penalty going, I didn't like your bind. Particularly when they're
not having an effect.
I think it's like, I'm not going to put up with that today. Mm-hmm. If you do it, I'll penalise you. Yeah, I think that's the way to any referee should look at it. Because it's not an illegal bind of a front rower, yes, you're having an impact, but it's a good sort of cheating, you know, where...
when flankers do it, it's a good sort of cheating.
Yeah, but if a referee goes, I don't want to see that, and he does it, well, then that's idiotic, but he won't. Mm-hmm. If he's told not to do it, he'll stop.
Can we talk about Carberry then? How is he getting on? What level of performance are we seeing from him as somebody who's getting game time at 10 now?
Yeah, I think he's doing really well. I think we're going to see a big evolution of the Munster game plan because of him. I said it on the road show down in Limerick, because of him, because of Tadhg Byrne, the way that they can play the game.
Tadhg Byrne's good, isn't he?
I think Tadhg Byrne is going to really push hard for that Ireland 23. He picks very clever lines because he has to, because he's not the biggest second row in the world. And if he runs into traffic, he can get annihilated. So he's a bit like Josh van der Fleer, where he's clever and he spots the space and he runs hard early and catches players looking, you know, ball watching, and he catches inside shoulders, and that's how he makes his impacts. And then obviously over the ball, he's immovable.
Well, that's the so
he
does
is
that change,
one of the best poachers out there.
And does that kind of turn us into like Australia with Pocock and?
Well, if you've got a second row doing it as well, Henderson is really good at it as well for a big man. I haven't seen a whole lot. I've never seen Dev stealing a ball. I've never seen. I haven't seen James Ryan yet, but he's done everything else. So. Yeah. But to have that, but also the fact that he can move in, he can play second row, back row, to have the opportunity to, if your second rows are going really well, particularly when they're youngish guys like James Ryan and Henderson, for instance, if they're going to do 80 minutes, to be able to change two of your back rowers, you know, to have two back rowers on a bench is absolutely huge, where one can also fit into the second row, like Fardy's doing with Leinster this weekend. That's a real luxury to have that.
Okay, and that also then, it does turn your team into a team that suddenly is competing at every facet of the game. It's like whoever is arriving and challenging at the ruck, they're all confident that they can try and steal the ball.
But it's also, if you watch Tadhg Byrne, it's the cleverness of when he goes for it. He doesn't, it's like George Smith. You know, he doesn't waste his time on rucks that he knows are dead. It's not like, I'll really fight for this one, even though it's very heavily stacked in, you know, the attack's favour. It's like, I'll leave this one off.
Yeah.
The one will come in a second. Patient, cleverly patient.
But we were talking about tiers and you were mentioning the teams who could actually take on Leinster at the moment. Like, this is a Munster team who don't really have anywhere near their first choice backline available to them at the moment. We don't know what their best centre partnership is going to be, and they obviously didn't have Keith Earls last week, and yet they were at Exeter, which is apparently this terrifying ground that all of Europe has real struggles to go to, and
all of the Premiership.
Yeah. Leinster won there. Now Munster probably should have won there.
Certainly, they should have won.
Certainly
they should
could have won. Have. Like, you get
they're missing Earls, Farrell, Tauta and Murray.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably all starting. Maybe that's a bit doing a bit of a disservice to Rory Scannell, who probably outside of the Racing semi-final has not played a bad game for Munster in 15 months.
I would probably have Scannell and Farrell in the centre.
I think so too. I think Scannell starts at 12. It's what he does. I think that left foot as well is very important to have, but he doesn't have bad games.
And he's very physical as well.
You had him there with
I think him and
Chris
Farrell are the
Murray
number one
nine,
partnership
Earls on
as
the
well.
Wing.
Andrew Conway and Mike Haley with Joey Carberry.
Super back line.
That's a very, very tidy back line.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
very tidy.
Must feel great. Like, if they go into the fixtures in round 3 and 4 with possibly 7 points, minus those guys, Van Graan will feel like he's in a really good place, particularly with Farrell and Tauta back in training. Murray, according to himself a week ago, is nearing a return. Obviously, that's shredded in doubt because we've got so much little information on it. And then the continued improvement of Mike Haley. We know what we're getting from Conway. And Carberry will be even more settled at that stage. He starts at 10 tomorrow. It equals the number of starts in the Champions Cup at out half that he ever made for Leinster in the space of a week. And already you can just see why it was so important that he made the move.
But it was also, he did a nice mixture to his game. You know, it was those long searching kicks that we don't associate with him. We all know what he's good at. But
except for that very long searching one at the end.
Yeah, but there's nothing in that, you know.
Oh, I mean,
you know,
the wind was outrageous there. The wind was just outrageous there last week.
And yeah, so I think if they lose the game, he gets beaten up over that. Yeah. I think we can cut him a little bit of slack. But but I think the result, some other lovely, lovely touches, good proficient defender. And he's still only 6 or 7 games into the season with them too. Like he's getting to know. But I tell you what, I saw him celebrate the hardest on Standard's try.
Yeah.
He is properly invested now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's not thinking, hey, I'll do a couple of years down here. He's in.
Yeah, totally. So they're going to win, and that's going to be straightforward, and it's going to be a bonus point win for them. And if it isn't, anything else is a disaster.
It's not a disaster, but it's an opportunity lost. You need to be picking up 5 points because I think Cass are in this in a big way. You can usually write Cass off in the Champions
League. Do you think Cass beat Exeter this weekend?
At home, I think they have a brilliant chance of beating them. They don't lose many games at home, whether they're...
Exeter don't lose many games. Exeter are very, very good on the road.
They are, but...
And as well, off the back of a disappointment, they're a phenomenal team to react well. And they will be disappointed that they only drew at home.
But we've seen Castle
in the past.
And they'll
know that they have to go on the road and win now, having given up 2 points at home.
We've seen Castle teams multiple times in the last 10 years out of the competition in rounds 5 or 6, beating good teams at home because they just don't want to lose games at home. And they're the top 14 champions. They've got their new
how, by European the way, I don't know how they're top 14 champions.
Well,
you know,
on paper, you're thinking how. But they obviously know how. I mean, it's their second title in, what, six seasons? I mean, it's ridiculous for a club of their stature. But now that they've gone away from home in week one and picked up a bonus point, they'll be thinking, why not give the European campaign a bit more of a rattle than we have in the past? And with Munster home and away still to come, like, I think I wouldn't be surprised if Cass win this game. And what does that do for Exeter? They're seriously behind the eight ball then in this pool.
They're in major trouble, they're in major trouble.
Although they'll fancy their chances of picking up 10 points in the back-to-back games at Gloucester after that. So they'll definitely still be in it before they have Cast at home after Christmas and then Munster away.
Well, you would hope that there'll be a lot at stake in that return fixture in Thomond Park where Exeter have to go and pick up a win, which you would imagine now, even off the first round, that they're going to need to do.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally. They absolutely will have to because you can see Munster also picking up all full points against Gloucester in both these games.
Yeah.
If Gloucester are as bad as advertised.
But they're not. Gloucester have been good in the Premiership, by the way. They've been very good in parts.
So why are Dave's predicting like a 30-point
beat? But when you say Gloucester have been good in the Premiership in parts, like what does that actually mean anymore?
Well, like
Wasps have been decent. They're fourth behind a Wasps team annihilated by Leinster last week.
Yeah.
I think it's been very hard to get a read on Gloucester's season. Started really, really well. And Cipriani in particular started unbelievably.
And since then... He was player of the month in the Premiership for September. Since then, they've lost guy after guy from their pack. There are 11 guys down in the pack, to the point that Matt Banahan was nearly going to have to play as a forward had he come off the bench last weekend. And now their top scorer, Charlie Sharples, is gone. It's not that I don't think their squad is decent, but it's decimated. And they were not great last weekend, albeit, as you say, Neil, in pretty difficult conditions to play a decent brand of rugby. And Ackerman has definitely improved them. He's got them back into the Champions Cup for the first time since 2013, 2014. Look at the 23 they've picked. Like, who in there is going to convince you that they could be a real force in this competition?
Let's move on from that because we'll see. Question here. Can Munster, from Ronan Fitzgerald asking on YouTube, can Munster really challenge in Europe? Is it really about having good backs or is there just not enough carrying in the forwards compared to Leinster? The Exeter game is a case in point. Do they have enough ball carriers? Do you need ball carriers as much as...
They could do with another one. They could.
Is that why Tommy O'Donnell's back in this week instead of Chris Clute?
But like he made a great impact, but Tommy, he's a nice ball carrier, but he's not destructive. I think if you look at that Leinster pack comparatively, you've got Sean Cronin, you've got Cian Healy, you've got James Furlong. Ryan picking lines, you've got Furlong that can carry too, and then all your back rowers plus Sean O'Brien.
All 8 of them really.
Devon still carries a good bit, but probably the worst of the ball carriers that you'd choose from that. So that there's a lot of go forward there. I think, when you look at the tight heads, Archer and Ryan, neither of them really ball carriers. Scannell's not bad. Kilcoyne on his day.
Kilcoyne will, yeah.
Yeah. Klein, fine. Tyburn picks good lines, but isn't. So it's really, that's why there's such reliance on CJ.
Yeah.
In particular, CJ.
And it gets a little bit predictable with Stander.
Well, yeah. He doesn't pass that much. He doesn't.
Yeah.
And so teams are analysing that. So that's where I think that's where the likes of Billy Vunipola evolved his game a couple of seasons ago, where he became this playmaker as well as this ball carrier.
Yeah,
and now, and Sean O'Brien's done O'Brien a little bit of that as well.
More, yeah.
Yeah. And it's almost an evolution where there's a bit of the Skulk Burger in it, where you just got fed up getting beaten up and, you know, get someone else to do it. But also create space for you.
Yeah.
You
tip and that's, on three, that's why Ty Byrne as well is so good with the ball as well, because he's likely to pass it as much as he is to carry it.
Yeah.
And it just creates a little
playmaker.
Bit of uncertainty.
Yeah. Exactly. Once it goes into his arms, he has options.
Yeah.
Whereas there's certain players that get it and you go, right, you know, we'll think Jam and Hustle can bang in on this because he's not shifting it.
Yeah.
Whose job is it to get CJ Sander to become that player? I mean, obviously he's thinking about it himself. But
I think you know, it has to happen provincially. I think there's only so much coaching that can happen come international. But that said, he does a very effective job when he does carry.
Yeah.
When they need a hard meter or two, give it to him.
Yeah.
So he does that as well. So it's just making life a little bit easier for him. And
but those yards will become much easier.
They will become easier, I think, if there's an evolution to his game.
Yeah.
On the question of whether they can challenge in Europe, like, we almost forget that they have been to the last two semi-finals. And if they top the pool and they get a home quarter-final, well, they're challenging in Europe straight away, because you think a semi-final is almost a guarantee.
There's been a big gulf in class by the time they got there. To semi-final.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have been in the semi last year, other than that abysmal defending. It was a great try from Andrew Conway, but abysmal defending from
Toulon.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who was playing 10 for that kick and
chase. Oh, it was Trindue, wasn't
Trindue.
It?
Yeah, God, it was appalling. It was like marking space. but yeah, great footwork and, yeah, fine. They got it done, but then
it was the Murray try as well at that ruck about a half yard from the try.
That's smart. Whereas I just thought
you don't want to be conceding that.
I thought the defense on that kick chase, when, you know, it's championship minutes. That I just thought, that was soft. But Munster, you get to a semi final, of course. Yeah, and, you know, you have a big performance, then you're in a final. Finals have been lost by
better teams.
Comfortable favourites. That's for sure.
The Ulster team is a significant change. Like, it's barely recognisable from last season's team in many aspects, and they performed well last week, and it was like, okay, this is a real thing. Like, but obviously, traditionally over the last 5-6 years, their away form in European competition has been pretty grim. So this is the test. Racing's home form is brilliant at the moment. They're scoring tries, they're throwing the ball around, averaging something like 30 odd points a game at home this season. So it's going to be a long night for Ulster.
This is a proper test. This is a real test as to see where they are. I think if they get out of that group, that is a result for them this season.
Mm-hmm.
I just fancy, Racing looked pretty handy last week. They didn't really even have to kick into, you know, fourth, fifth gear. They were comfortable, they were cruising.
Yeah.
And Scarlets isn't an easy place to go and get a win. Now, Scarlets have a few injuries themselves, particularly at 10, but they will fancy it at home. They have a great record there. You know, play indoors. You look at that back three. William Moff, Zeebo and Teddy Toma. You kick loosely to that, and you're in major trouble. That said, I think, you know, Leicester weren't great last weekend, don't get me wrong, but Ulster still had to get it done, and I thought, you know, they showed improvements, that's for sure. But I think they're a coming side, and it's going to take a couple of years. It's not going to be, if they do get out of I'd be very impressed if they get out of the pool.
Yeah, having Cooney missing is really disappointing, because we want to see
massive loss.
Yeah.
Massive.
I tell you, I like the look of your man Michael Lowry. He's a good little footballer. I think with the new tackle laws coming in, and we met with Joel Juge last week prior to Europe, and I can't tell you how confusing the whole thing is now about high tackles. And,
even after you met with him?
Well, you know, without speaking out of turn, there's so many different people have different opinions on what happened with that Jamie Roberts and Kaino issue. Some people thought it was play on, some thought it was a penalty, some thought it was red card. And now he's been cited.
Yeah.
So, and this is like adjudicators and coaches.
We were talking about it.
Kaino thought he was lucky not to get red.
Right.
And then, so yellow, I think, was the one thing that it wasn't. I thought it was definitely not yellow.
It's either nothing or red.
So
yeah. It was. I've seen it, say 100 times now. I haven't a clue what my verdict is.
I think on the basis of the conversation we had last week with Joel Juge, that it's a red card.
So for anybody,
if you're trying to,
if anybody missed it, what happened?
Yeah. So we talked and he talked us through what we were trying to look out for in Europe this year and what they're trying to outlaw. So the forearm ball carrier, forearm to the face or chin, that's immediate red card if you make contact. High shots of any sort whatsoever, you know, it's going to be punishable by red card.
High shots are over the shoulder. It's like,
yeah, and it's any direct contact, shoulder to head, immediate red card.
Okay.
Likelihood of a red card slipping up from chest up to head if you make impact.
That's
a strong. Yeah. So I thought that was an unbelievable opportunity for them to lay down the marker.
I think the killer in that particular incident was that they couldn't find an angle
angles are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And
if you're in doubt and you're trying to change the law and you're trying to change habits, that was the perfect opportunity, because players are aware of this as well. And until we're going to have a few shocks and a few, this is outrageous, the game's gone soft, and all, we're going to need to change the mentality. And I've come around full circle. I thought it was going soft last year. There was one where Manu Tuilagi got sided on Clute. And if you look back now, he hit him on the chin with a shot, and that's a red card now.
Yeah.
And if we do need to preserve the game. And we're going to have to, it's going to have to go extreme to be able to come back a little bit.
That's the thing. It is at that point. Like, you're constantly seeing stuff about how the legal profession are now getting involved. People are going, rightly, after a rugby career and saying, I played with concussion, the club knew I had concussion. How liable are they for the fact that I now don't remember where my keys are? Mm. Like, and the legal profession are looking into this. So if you do want to preserve the game, you've got to get out in front of that. Like, we're literally talking about the survival of the sport as something that you will have people doing in 15, 20 years' time if you don't manage it properly.
Mm. I agree.
So there should have been a red card in the Kino case then to help that process along.
Well, I think he's going to get off. So they've appealed his 5-week ban. And I think because there's so much confusion around it and because the angles aren't...
Conclusive.
His own quote on it, I think, is that it was a decision based on feelings rather than facts.
Well, he's probably right, because of the lack of that angle.
Yeah.
No camera on the other side of the field. I could understand it, how they couldn't find, because the referee was saying to the team, oh, what other angles have you got for me? And they just kept showing him those same two, one from the side, one from behind. But the one that you wanted was on the far side.
From behind.
On the blind side of the field.
Behind
the final. Exactly. And would have given a real... view of where Kino's shoulder was in relation to Jamie Roberts' chin.
I spoke to another referee who was refereeing over the weekend on Sunday night about it to get a sense as to what he thought. And he said that the longer you go with footage, the harder it is not to have something.
Yeah.
So if you call on 5, 6, 7 replays, it's very hard to go, yeah, there's nothing. Let's go back. It's very, very hard. Sorry for slowing the game down for 2.5 minutes there, but we'll just play on, everything's grand. So that almost encourages, I better give him a yellow card.
Yeah.
Which for me was the one thing that it definitely wasn't.
It's totally sitting on the fence.
It's a little something. Yeah, which, you know what? Well, I'm not sure myself, so I'll give him a yellow. It's not too bad. It's not going to change the game completely.
Yeah.
I'm pretty unsure about that myself.
Another interesting aspect of this game for me is on the back of what happened last week in the Bath Toulouse game. Billy Burns has the opportunity to take centre stage this weekend, and he arrived at Ulster thinking that he was the goal kicker. He's barely had a chance to get the kicking tee in his hand at all. Mm. He's going to get an opportunity to play against the side who were in the final last year in that indoor arena, which has got a brilliant atmosphere. It's quite claustrophobic. He pretty much has to nail every kick that comes his way. Like, if he leaves at 15 to 18 points off the kicking tee at the weekend, they have a chance of winning the game. Mm. If he misses one or misses four or five, well, then the Burns name is going to be thrown around for the second week in a row.
I tell you, it's a big responsibility on David Shannon as well. Mm. You know, he's been in Ulster for a few seasons now. You know, he still looks as though he just came out of school last week. But that's a big cauldron of a place to go and play. And and big responsibility on him. So much goes to, obviously, so much goes through your halfback pairing. And as you mentioned, Billy Burns, I think the same sort of pressure comes on Dave Shannon to deliver a big performance that, as of yet, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But they like him, and you get your opportunity in a variety of different ways. Cooney's out, you know, there's your chance to shine.
Yeah. Incredibly hard to see them take anything.
I find it difficult to see anything there.
If they were to get a losing bonus points, it's a massive result.
Yeah.
Like, look at the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a very, very callow bench at this level. Like, if they need to hang in there for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty tricky for them as well. Let's have a look at the fixtures for the weekend. All of these on your Air Sport pack. Munster against Gloucester kicks off at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Racing against Ulster is a 6:30 kickoff, and then on Sunday, it is Toulouse versus Leinster. That one kicks off at 4:15 for you there. One last thing that we just wanted to talk about. Christian Wade has decided to quit Wasps in the middle of the season and go and try and join the NFL. It's not even like combine season. It's not like he's just dipping in for a few weeks.
It's combine season like
next year.
January, yeah. Is it? February? Like
early,
March,
early of the
March,
year.
March, April.
Yeah.
Yeah, March, April. Yeah.
And the draft is like, what, April season. Or so, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe he wants to go and work on his footwork before the combine.
It's madness, isn't it?
It seems a strange one. Obviously, someone is in his ear and bright lights, and maybe he was there's talk of him being a bit disgruntled about how he's been treated from an English perspective.
One cap. I mean, he's certainly better than one English cap.
He is better than one English cap, you know, considering some of the players that over the last 10 years that have been capped. But on his day, he is box office. He has scored some outrageous tries. Question marks, of course, about his defence. Yeah. But
won't have to do that in the NFL.
Like if he fancies himself as a punt returner, for example, like, so he's got all the weaponry. But to be a good punt returner, has he? Or are I just displaying a lack of ignorance as to the quality of the NFL?
Are not 100 of those types of athletes that come into the combine every year that are 20 years that are 20 years of age, that are quicker than him, have better feet than him, are bigger than him, are more resilient than him?
We don't know, though, do we?
Well, you don't know, but you kind of do. You hear the turnover of NFL players says it all. That you have to be quite remarkable to stay the course. What, the average is 2.5 or 3 seasons.
And they're the ones who make it.
Yeah.
Half, every team has as many players again on their practice squad at the start of the year that gets cut down. So there's a 90-man practice squad, which whittles down to like 53 on game days at the start of the year. So 2,000 players get fired every August. There's a firing weekend where 2,000 players are literally fired out. And the notion that Christian Wade is going to...
Get your waivers, isn't that it?
Yeah.
Use your waivers.
Yeah, and that's it. Off you go. Like, Jarrad Hayne was like an NRL player who made it all the way to a game and dropped the ball, and they were like, off you go, buddy. Like, dropped the ball once. And that was at San Francisco 49ers. He was like an astonishingly good athlete, like the best NRL rugby player that there was. So,
it's fascinating.
Best of luck, Christian. They're citing a couple of other guys who've made it, who are like tight ends, but they haven't actually made it. They're on practice squads, and like, they're younger.
Your man Williamson,
6'9".
Yeah.
Yeah. Christian Wade's not 6'9", is he?
No, he's not.
What's the name of the Patriots guy who played sevens at the Olympics? It's gone for me.
If he makes it, it'll be an amazing story.
If he does, if he doesn't,
he's tried out.
You can go back and play rugby.
Yeah.
Who's not going to pick him up?
It's go back off.
And you go back and play for Sale.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe you can play rugby in America. All right, good stuff. One last thing to remind you about. This is about our roadshow on the 13th of November. We're asking if Ireland can repeat the heroics of Soldier Field in Chicago when the All Blacks come to Dublin next month. That's what we're going to be talking about at the latest Off the Ball Roadshow in association with Heineken Rugby Club. We're going to be live from the Olympia Theatre on Tuesday, November the 13th. The tickets for this are flying out the door, by the way, so if you're on the fence, get off it right now. We'll have an all-star lineup of Ireland and All Blacks legends who we'll be revealing over the next few days. Get on to offtheball.com/events now to get your tickets. It's the latest Off the Ball Roadshow in association with Heineken Rugby Club. And remember, this event is for over 18s only. Visit drinkaware.ie. Good stuff, folks. Enjoy the weekend. What game are you? Are you doing games?
Munster, and then have the studio for Toulouse, Leinster. Yeah.
What are you doing?
Same for me.
Very good. We will see you later. Thanks very much.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball
with Air Sport. Watch live Pro 14 action on Air Sport this season. Visit airsport.ie.